Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. A radio.com sports station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Advent. If you have snoring, sleep apnea, or nasal breathing problems, go to AdventNose.com to schedule your appointment.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry, I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
Pro Football Talk.
I wouldn't listen to some of those people out there, especially guys like Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi on The Score.
Let's talk NFL with Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk on Twitter, Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports, and with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apford.com. Hello again, Mike. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
We're good. I loved the J.J. Watt uniform number story. I just thought that was really cool because it made people look up who Marshall Goldberg was and remember when the NFL had guys named Marshall Goldberg running around and plying their trade. And it was just very nice for him to reach out to Goldberg's daughter for permission, for her blessing to wear the retired number. And then he, in turn, made a donation to the family's charity. Just a nice football story.
Couple of things. First of all, I didn't know Marshall Goldberg was from Elkins, West Virginia, which is about an hour from here. He had a nickname in high school of Biggie because he weighed 110 pounds, had his number retired by Pitt, 42, 99 by the Chicago Cardinals, took a break from the NFL to serve in the Navy in World War II, and these are all things that I'm aware of because of this number issue. With all that said, and I have no fault with Watt, no fault with Goldberg's family, I believe that the Cardinals should not have allowed the number to be reissued, because if you're going to retire a number, you understand going in what it means. Don't retire a number if you're not going to retire the number. And I made my concerns clear to some folks I know in Arizona, and the best I could get in response was, well, Michael Jordan unretired, and Jason Witten unretired, and Brett Favre unretired. No. Don't retire a number unless you're going to honor it. And I think the Cardinals needed to be the grown-up in the rooms here and say, sorry, we're not going to do this. We've retired the number. It's a permanent tribute to the player. That's why we do it. Once you start making exceptions, then any of them could be unretired.
That's it. That's the main point when it comes to that. What does a jersey retirement really mean? I agree. Mike, when it comes to that division, we think of the offensive power in it now, but the defensive pass rushers, when you include J.J. Watt, even though he's a little bit older, that makes me excited to watch the NFC West next year even more.
Well, yeah, I mean, the NFC West is the best division in football, and I firmly believe that J.J. Watt, at the end of the day, chased the money instead of chasing a championship. He's joining a team that was 8-8 last year, third place in the division, would have been fourth place if the 49ers hadn't had those injury issues, and very well could be third or fourth place again this year. But go get the money, because I think that Watt had enough time on the market to realize that there's no way to will your way to a championship. You don't know which team is going to stay healthy and put it all together and have the dominoes fall in place and win in the divisional round when maybe they aren't supposed to, like the Buccaneers at New Orleans this year, win in the conference championship round like the Buccaneers did in Green Bay this year, win in the Super Bowl over a team that beat them in the regular season. You can't connect the dots in a way that makes you sufficiently confident you're going to compete for a championship. So take the best offer, go there, and hope for the best. And either way, you're getting paid. And, you know, the numbers are out now, and as I suspected, the original numbers were off. They were inflated by the agent, and the reporters who get the scoop pass it along, otherwise they don't get the scoop. But there's $3 million of fluff in there based on getting 10 sacks in back-to-back years, something Watt hasn't done since 2014 and 2015. But 2 years, $28 million is more than anyone else was offering, so he grabbed the money, and I got no problem with him doing that.
Do you know anything more about the likelihoods in the future of Allen Robinson than we do? Because we had a classic Bears conference yesterday of nothing but the same noncommittal tropes and platitudes, and we like Allen and we like our good players, and it's Ryan Pace saying everything's a shared responsibility, so nobody's taking any blame or any credit for anything. It was just really unsatisfying yesterday. What the hell's going on with their best offensive player?
Yeah, look, even though the franchise tag is supposed to be used as a placeholder to allow negotiations to continue, and there must be a good faith desire by the team to employ the player at the salary that is extended under the franchise tag, there are teams that will tag simply for the flexibility to trade and get value. And it's not an easy process because the player has to sign the tender. He's got to be on board with the trade. He's got to sign the long-term deal. It all has to be worked out behind the scenes before you officially implement this tag and trade strategy, but teams contemplate doing that. The importance, though, is to be extremely discreet. You can't come out and say we're thinking about tagging and trading. You keep it vague. Maybe you work out a long-term deal. Maybe you don't. Apply the tag and then see if there's a trade to be had or a long-term deal to be negotiated. But yeah, it's something they need to prioritize if they want to keep one of their few offensive players that you can look at and say that's a guy that you need to have on your team. But then the question becomes, if you would trade him, what do you get in return? And, you know, these are all things to be determined at the deadline. That's the key. The deadline's next Tuesday, so there's still 6 days for them to figure out what they're going to do. And I think it's smart, even though it's frustrating from a media and fan standpoint to not know what they're going to do, it's smart to not let anyone know what they're thinking. So they still have maximum options available to them, and they can try to work something out between now and then.
He's not the only big name, of course, that we're trying to figure out what happens during this window. What's the latest with Dak Prescott?
Well, the one thing that we need to remember about Dak Prescott, because I'm seeing now the suggestions that he wants Patrick Mahomes' money. Who does he think he is? He's not Patrick Mahomes, yada, yada. Quarterback market calls for this, that, other thing. Dak Prescott's leverage as it relates to his negotiations with the Cowboys, have nothing to do with what anyone else is making. His leverage comes from the fact that if they don't sign him to a long-term deal and franchise tag him again, he gets $37.68 million this year. So the starting point for negotiations on a long-term contract, $37.68 million. Anything less than that, and Dak Prescott isn't going to trade in his ability to make $37.68 million under the tag. Then next year, three options. Let him walk away in free agency, franchise tag at $54.25 million, which the Cowboys surely won't do, 44% raise by rule for the third tag, or transition tag, right to match, 20% raise, $45 million plus, just for the right to match whatever someone else would offer on a long-term deal. That's what he has. That's his bird in the hand. That's his door number one. So to get him to take door number two, you got to come up with something better than what's behind door number one, or at least as good as what's behind door number one. That's what drives his leverage. So 37.68 plus what for next year? What's the guarantee for 2022 to get him to say, I'll trade in 37.68 plus 45 or 54 or open market? That's what makes it very, very difficult. And Dak Prescott has never capitulated to this effort by the Joneses to get him to do them a solid and give them a contract that lets them sign other players. But they need to get him signed to a long-term deal because you can't go in. Well, you can, but it makes it a lot harder to do business elsewhere if you go into the 2021 season with a reduced salary cap and 37.68 assigned to your starting quarterback.
Another topic the Bears brass were addressing yesterday is the approach to this draft, the unconventional approach to not having the a combine, not having the opportunity to see these guys in quite the same way. Who has advantages here? What are the arrangements of scouting departments or the empowerments of certain lieutenants? What teams are in a better position to understand this whole draft better than others?
I think the teams who will be best suited, and I don't know which ones they are because it's not like they put out billboards outside their facility advertising this, but I would look for the teams with the proven track record of scouting based on film and being able to take into account the performance of a player against lesser talent. That's the key. You know, Zach Wilson, the BYU quarterback, Chris Sims has him as his top quarterback, and Chris has been very good at evaluating incoming quarterbacks for draft purposes. He was all over Lamar Jackson the year he went 32nd. He was all over Patrick Mahomes the year that he went 8 spots behind another guy who I can't remember. But he's all over Zach Wilson, and I think the challenge with that, when you look at the schedule that BYU played last year, and we talked about this today. I rattled off the list. I mean, there were a couple schools there I didn't even know had football programs. I didn't even know the schools existed. How do you project NFL performance when you've got great performances against talent that is far from the best that college football has to offer? I think that's the challenge in a year like this. How do you evaluate the film? How do you create apples-to-apples comparisons when you're not going to have that gathering of talent in Indianapolis and they're all on the same field doing the same things, operating in the same space, so you can at least get a feel for who really belongs and who doesn't?
Peter King had a bunch of us in Chicago raising eyebrows the other day when he came out with his Football Morning in America column and said that Jimmy Graham, friend of Russell Wilson's, might be a helpful link in order to get him to come to Chicago in some way, shape, or form. What's your opinion on this possibility at all?
Well, I think that Matt Nagy is the key for Russell Wilson. I think the Bears are on that list of 4 teams for which Russell Wilson would accept a trade because Russell Wilson wants to be Patrick Mahomes. And I think Russell Wilson believes he's every bit as skilled as Patrick Mahomes. And when you look at the film of their best plays, the difference between Mahomes and Wilson is that Wilson strikes like a cobra. There's no buildup. There's no windup. There's no running around with your hair on fire like Mahomes does that gets us on the edge of our seats. It's all just very quick and sudden, and you don't really appreciate the greatness of it until it's over. Now, that's at his best. At his worst, he holds the ball too long. He's responsible for a lot of the sacks. There's some things that would have to be ironed out. But I think he's attracted to the Bears because Matt Nagy has that Kansas City offense, that same offense that integrated Patrick Mahomes as the backup but was laying the foundation for what came in 2018 while Nagy was there as the offensive coordinator. So I think Wilson looks at that and says, hey, you can just do what you were going to do if you hadn't gotten the Bears job with Mahomes. You can do it with me. So I think that's the best way to explain the Bears' presence on the list, because most people would look at those 4 teams and say, why are the Bears there? I think that's why the Bears are there, and I think that's why the Bears are a viable candidate. Now, the question is, what's it going to take to get Russell Wilson? But if I'm the Bears, I'm calling the Seahawks, and I'm saying, what do you want? Tell me what you want, and we'll see if we can work something out.
Meanwhile, your guy Chris Sims put out his list of quarterbacks ranked for this draft, and he is causing a bit of a stir in that he has Trevor Lawrence 2nd.
Yeah, I mean, he loves Zach Wilson, and he thinks Zach Wilson has Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes potential. He's not as smitten with Trevor Lawrence. He's studied all the throws and all the plays that both guys have made, at least for last year, if not the year before that as well. I mean, he puts a lot of time and effort into it, and really, he does get it right more often than not. The challenge is projecting what a guy is going to do in a system. But I think one of the reasons why Chris has been right in recent years, teams are taking guys and doing with them what they did at the college level. So it's easier to say, hey, if this guy thrived doing this, well, he's going to thrive at the NFL level because these teams realize instead of saying we have to fit this guy into our system, we're going to fit our system to suit his skills and abilities. But yeah, and look, he's not doing it for attention. He's not doing it for clickbait. You know, he said on the show today he aspires to be a GM, and he has proven that he can evaluate quarterbacks coming out of the draft. And he was one, and he grew up with one, and he knows what to look for. He knows the nuances, everything, mechanics, throwing motion, the way the guy grips a football, the way a guy moves with the ball in his hands, the way a guy makes decisions. He can spot all that stuff, and he got my attention. And he told me that if the Jaguars take Trevor Lawrence as expected, unless they wake up to Zach Wilson as well, that the Jets should sprint to the podium and take Zach Wilson and not consider any opportunity to trade for a Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson if that would somehow fall into their laps with the picks that they have. Because they're one of the few teams that really could make one of those trades, because they've got the second overall pick, another first rounder this year, and two first rounders next year because of the Jamal Adams trade.
That's high praise for Zach Wilson. That is, if you're saying, you know, forego Deshaun Watson, who is, I think, the highest rated passer in the history of the NFL, and you know, one of the best at a peak time for quarterbacks, that is high praise indeed.
I'd always lean toward the proven commodity, but I guess if you're talking about second overall pick plus other stuff, you know, at some point you got to ask yourself, is it worth it for the proven commodity to throw in the other stuff, or am I willing to just take the risk with the young guy who's unproven, but I get to keep all my other stuff, and I'll turn around and trade Sam Darnold and get some other stuff for him.
Assets. Assets always play. Let's just
lottery tickets. Hey, that's what it, you get as many lottery tickets as you can, because that's the way to build a successful team. You scratch as many lottery tickets as possible, and you hope that you get enough guys who can come in and be good players at all positions.
Mike Florio, appreciate it as always. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
That is Mike Florio. We got some Cubs news, actually.
Yeah.
They actually signed a veteran, versatile player to a minor league deal. They are looking at another one-time star, potentially.
Big name.
And we had our first Cubs marquee broadcast yesterday. So let's hit on all of those things in the very next segment on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Welcome back. Bottom of the second. Cubs come up to hit, and we're joined by Cubs manager David Ross.
Well, Dutt, your voice sound good on Cubs TV. Welcome, Boog Sham.
How are you?
I'm good, buddy. I'm good. It's nice to hear your voice, that's for sure.
Can we keep you for just a smidge after this?
Yeah, I guess. Right. I guess. I get paid to talk to you guys.
Oh, wow. Here we go.
I can't wait to talk to you next inning.
Well, that was comfortable. That was a nice, comfortable baseball watch yesterday. That was the debut of John Boog Shambi as the voice of the Cubs on Marquee Network.
John Boog, these old things, the Louis Vuitton mashup Nikes. At least he tweeted us the picture. I thought he was awesome, but I also know him as Boog first, and then now Cubs announcer Boog second. To me, it was him in his element, but just here.
Well, and what I really liked about it was there's a certain sort of classic ESPN baseball sound, the play-by-play. Like, you know, when they hire their play-by-play voices, no matter who, whether it's Dave O'Brien or Dan Shulman or Jason Benetti, there is a baritone, stentorian tone. There's a size and gravity to the way they like their baseball broadcast to sound. Mm-hmm. And it didn't sound like that. He sounded like himself, but he definitely sounded a little more relaxed, not as sort of networky, presiding voice. It was like your buddy Boog calling a game with you. And we talked to him about it, but it's definitely coming through. That is, there is, and maybe it's because it's spring training too. Maybe this obviously changes when things gear up for regular season, but that's what you want. You're hanging out with your guy. That's your baseball best friend in the world for the next 3 hours as you're watching your team. And
or two and a half or two.
Right. If it's a spring training game, two is just fine, as we know.
But, me and my six friends are really upset. Yeah,
I liked the tone was just right for me.
It was an enjoyable broadcast, as you knew you were gonna get. Who wasn't excited whenever they mentioned that he was going to be the new play-by-play announcer. And then I said, how spoiled are we in this town? And it just shows. And I've been enjoying Jim DeShea's work ever since he was with the Astros.
Great.
So I've always laughed at his sense of humor and enjoyed his work. And it's nice to watch a Cubs game. It's nice to listen to a Cubs game. It's nice to watch a White Sox game. I'm just happy there's baseball right now. And then we also got to see Edward Alcalay on the mound. The livest arm. Don't know that that's a word. The most live arm in that starting rotation. Touch 95, nice slider. He's showing some improvement.
I thought we were going to get back to Hawk Rahimi here and talk about a lively bat. That's the liveliest arm I've seen since Louis Tion. Just some random dude.
He had to throw. How dare you bring up Louis Tion on this broadcast?
Why did I see Louis Tion in the news recently?
I don't know. I always think about him and the Johnny Cueto delivery being similar.
Oh, very similar. I love the stories about, I used to watch Tion, but and the stories about him smoking the cigar in the shower.
Sweet.
That he was the only, and the story about his dad, that one time his 90-year-old father came to throw out the ceremonial first pitch, and it was like 80 miles an hour, something like that. His dad was also a pitcher. And then he wanted the ball, he threw the pitch, like, yay. He's like, no, I'm just getting started. Like, he thought he was going to get out there and, have a pen, have full pen and get the lather and the whole thing.
Is a shower cigar a tournament of greatness submission?
No, cigars are awful. Cigars are absolutely vile and disgusting, and there's nothing good about any of them. And no, if anybody else wants to have a cigar in the shower, enjoy.
There's a listener bracket.
So gross.
Listeners have a say in this.
Oh, yeah, fine. In the listener bracket, if a cigar in the shower is on Tournament of Greatness, fine. Shower beer, that's pretty good too. There's nothing like one of those midsummer.
I think we've talked about my lack of coordination in doing normal things and day-to-day things and job things and alcohol, so I can't submit that because I would probably fall down.
It's okay. You're allowed to fall. People fall down. It's a scorehouse. That's what
we
do.
You don't want to fall in the shower.
You get drunk, you fall down.
That's where bad things happen.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to have that life alert bracelet, whatnot.
That's true. Then people can come out and save you with the jaws of life and the whole thing. But that's not why you called. The Cubs signed infielder Eric Sogard to a minor league deal. Apparently, he would be the Kipnis replacement in the second base platoon as the left-handed hitter. And his nickname was, in Oakland, they called him Nerd Power, right? Because of his bespectacled appearance?
Oh, yeah. He was all part of that too cool for school Oakland anti-establishment, Grant Balfour rage, that vibe of a team, if you'll recall. I like it.
And he was a Brewer also, I want to say, recently. And he's going to be 35 relatively during the season, but he's fine. Yeah.
17-18 with Milwaukee, 19 with Toronto, 2020 back with Milwaukee.
All right. Okay. So Eric Sogard will be a Cub, bringing you complete nerd power. The might-be Cub is none other than Yoenis Cespedes. Yoenis Cespedes had a showcase for scouts from 11 teams, the Cubs being one of them. Cespedes is 35. He's played in 46 games since 2018. He's had all kinds of injuries and opted out last year. And he worked out for about 50 minutes, according to Ken Davidoff of the New York Post. He said, I could quote some of the scouts on site, but it would be more effective to express their general sentiments in a collective shrug, as many of them did. Their shrugs meaning, yep, he's still a physical wonder and somebody you can dream on. So the Yankees, Blue Jays, Brewers, Marlins, Rays, Tigers, Reds, Cubs, White Sox, Padres, and Braves sent representatives. More National League entries than American League if you're scoring at home. With the NL set to not deploy the DH, Cespedes planted himself in left field for a good while, fielded base hits and fly balls, using his still mighty arm to nail imaginary runners at second base, third base, and home plate. So he looked comfortable enough moving laterally in the outfield to get the job done.
Change of scenery would do him some good, of course. I'm trying to figure out. I thought I read an article recently saying that he was no longer with Brody Van Wagenen. So, at least there's that. But Cespedes, if he's still that guy, then why not? Somebody could sign him. It's just a matter of the price, right? It's like, how much are you willing to put up with the variables there?
Yes, off-field issues potentially, and or quote-unquote distractions. Maybe at 35, he's just mellowed out, and he's not interested in being that guy anymore. Or is this something that in mid-season where he like a Craig Kimbrell kind of signing, where he puts himself out there, he shows that he's in shape, and then you wait for attrition, injuries, COVID contact tracing, whatever it may be, and somebody says, look, now we need him, and we're going to bring him in to actually do stuff instead of just stashing him.
If a team needs him. And if you'll recall, he was victim to some pretty oddball injuries that derailed his, potentially some of his good years.
Wasn't he attacked by a wild pig?
Well, hey,
Or did I make that up?
No, and I've talked many times about the problems with wild boars on this show, okay? Feral hogs are a real issue that actually need to be addressed.
Well, that's why you have your AR-15 in Texas, right? That's the justification that you need all of your semi-automatic weapons to protect in case there are any number of feral hogs overrunning your family farm?
I mean, I guess that's their logic.
And there's actually, we looked at this, there's a helicopter hunting trip that you can take where you use like a belt-fed machine gun to shoot wild hogs from a helicopter.
But listen, yeah, that I thought was pretty
That's
cool.
That's like Apocalypse Now
that
kind
I thought
of stuff,
was cool,
right?
Because they are menaces. And yeah, the wild boar are a problem at Yoenis Cespedes' ranch, and apparently one of them led to his ankle injury. This is normal ranch stuff. Just so happens that he's a multi-million-dollar baseball player.
Yeah, well, multi-million-dollar baseball players should have it in their contracts. They're not allowed to do simple ranch stuff. This is like with Roy Halladay.
Well, not, and also Roy Oswalt, who also
what I meant. Excuse me. I meant to say Roy Halladay was the experimental plane that he was screwing around with while he had drugs in his system. That's a little different. It was Roy
post-career.
Roy Oswalt had two things, right? It was
tractor.
Noodling catfish. He was hand-grabbing for flathead catfish.
Yeah.
Sticking his actual right arm in a hole where an alligator snapper could be that would take off his hand.
But noodling is a skill.
I'm sure it is. Yeah, you got to wait for the fish to grab your hand and then you grab inside the gill and pull it out. Have you ever done it?
No. That would require A, a taste for catfish, B, arm and hand strength that I don't have, and C, patience.
And also, people who weigh less are in danger of being dragged down by, 75-pound thrashing.
I ain't that skinny. I got a low center of gravity, but I'm still not doing it. Also, this makes me sad about Alvin Kamara, who is happily enjoying Montana the last couple of days, and then people are trying to kill the vibe. Let him be on his snowboard. I don't want to hear it from y'all. The man is producing. Let people live their lives sometimes. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, the other Roy Oswalt thing, and we talked to him about it. He was a guest on the show, and he had just bought a backhoe. And we asked, I said, what are you doing with the backhoe? And he said, I'm building a lake.
Pond.
Yeah, he's dredging out a lake in his yard and he was going to fill it up. But he actually bought the backhoe so he could make his own lake.
I'm really disappointed in the 469 texter that wants to know why I'm against wild boars because, oh, that's a pun. I get it now. I'm pro Terry.
No, not that boars. Not that wild and not that
Terry
boars.
Terry Boars took your Yoenis Cespedes down. This is how rumors get started. So the question is, would you want Yoenis Cespedes on your team if you're the Cubs?
Would I as a broadcaster? Yeah, absolutely. I think their outfield, when they signed Jake Mariznick as sort of that fourth guy, defensive replacement type that you can... I didn't see the workout. I don't know. Cespedes is a big name and big skills and a lot of highlight moments, but I don't think they're going to do that.
He's probably going to be expensive.
He'd fit with the White Sox, though. He'd fit with that clubhouse and that dugout, wouldn't he? Would he be perfect?
I mean, even the Yankees are in on this guy. Oh, yeah. No, Cespedes is, he's a jovial, fun dude. I mean, add more fun to everything. That makes sense. But I think there's just too many teams who are interested in him, potentially. This is from Ken Davidoff of the New York Post. 11 teams had scouts on hand, right? We know that. Was on the field for 50 minutes, took fly balls in center. But like that, he's a real possibility for the Yankees, which I think is kind of crazy because if there's any contender for Tim Anderson's claim of them being the best in the American League,
Yeah, I'd say it's probably unlikely. I think more teams probably were there to take notes and say, put him on our emergency list, and maybe if we need a guy at some point, we'll say yes to that. But I know he would definitely be fun fitting into this, whatever this White Sox culture is. The Midday Midway is coming up next. A story we've been meaning to get to raises the question, is this irony? And I also, if you have a superpower and can prove it, somebody's got money for you.
I'm just going to continue with the hunting vibe. Sometimes you are the hunter, and sometimes you are the hunted.
You hunting the most dangerous game. That's coming up next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Here we are at the Midday Midway already. We started out by talking about the Bears and what they say and what they don't say and what they can't say, what they won't say, and trying to find somebody who does the kind of job that Ryan Pace does, that tries to disclaim as much responsibility as possible and diffuse responsibility and basically say he's not in charge of anything, running a team in the passive voice. Kendall Gill celebrated that resounding Illini victory last night, and we talked Bulls. Mike Florio had all kinds of pro football information, and then we talked about the Cubs signing Eric Sogard and looking at Yoenis Cespedes and just... realizing how comfy that marquee network broadcast is probably going to be with Boog Chomp.
And now you've thrown me off forever because I'm trying to figure out which team gets Cespedes. Like, who takes the flyer, who's got the risk, but the reward?
I'll ask you, is this irony? An Indian man has died after a tussle with his rooster on their way to the cockfight. Sarapali Chanavan Kateshwaram Rao, 50 years old, was hit in the neck with a blade tied to the rooster's claw. A police spokesman told CNN the father of three was taken to a hospital where he later died from a stroke. Well, wait a second here. A stroke because of this trauma? Or is this, it just so happened he got stabbed in the neck and then he was hit by a truck? Like, these might not be related things. He lives in Pragadavaram village in southern India's Andhra Pradesh. He was a regular at local cockfights and was on his way to enter the rooster in a competition when it tried to break free. It's been illegal in India since 1960, and animal fighting continues to be a problem in the country. And I would say, yeah, this is irony. And I would also say, don't put the blades on the rooster until you get to the arena.
Karma.
Right?
It's karma.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, that's an old saying. Don't put the blades on the rooster until you get to the arena.
Wasn't Aramis Ramirez big into this in the Dominican?
I don't know the answer to
Pretty
that.
Sure. I think it was like on the cover of Dominican Cockfighting Magazine, which is one your agent really has to work hard for you to get. You know, that's a big get for a publicist. But I think I'll look it up, but I'm pretty sure this was
the internet is in front of us right now.
That's true. We have our research department right here, as they say on the Compound Podcast. This is, and by the way, Ian Happ tomorrow at 9. Looking forward to that because I got to make sure to listen to the latest episode today during my workout. But I'm pretty sure that was old Aramis Ramirez thing back in the day. But yes, in this case, another case where we are rooting for the animal.
According to the ESPN story from 2008, he declined to talk about it.
That's a yes.
Okay, so there's that. Let's continue with this vibe, shall we? The Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources recently deployed a robotic deer to catch a man accused of poaching. How do you like them apples?
It has to be a pretty good robotic deer to fool a hunter.
Oh, yeah. Think about the cinematography these days with deer. The Crown comes to mind for you Netflix The Crown fans. But sometimes you're hunting, sometimes you're hunted. James Malone was arrested after authorities caught him shining a spotlight on a deer from his SUV. And that prey was not a normal deer. It was a robot. State DFW policy forbids hunters from deliberately casting rays of a spotlight or other artificial lights into any field, pasture, woodlands, or forest, whether public or private, where wildlife or domestic livestock may be reasonably expected to be located because they can blind the animals and then make it easier to kill them. cheating.
That's not fair. That's not even fair hunting.
Nope. And he previously hunted without a license. He killed a deer and didn't report it. And they also found methamphetamine.
Oh, hunting on meth, probably a bad idea. Right?
Yeah. You know what they used to call it before it got a fancy name like methamphetamine? Bathtub crank.
Wasn't that bath salts? Or is bathtub crank is meth?
Well, in Texas, bathtub crank was often used as a euphemism for meth.
Aha. Because the Florida issue had what they called bath salts, and that was like PCP.
Different thing, yeah.
That was turning people into cannibal zombies and all sorts of stuff.
It always comes back to zombies when we're in the studio. Why? Why is this a studio discussion?
It's true. This is, I don't know. Maybe we know something that we're...
We're alive!
I know. Maybe we're not, though. Maybe that's the twist ending.
It's because of Les.
I think these are his glasses he left here, actually. I'm not gonna...
Jay, has there been any follow-up to your thread from yesterday? Have you gotten any information from people about it?
I did get a request on the I'm Fat Podcast Facebook page to tell them where to stay in Door County because I've inspired people to go. So that's exciting.
I mean, Door County owes you money. That's how I see it.
I really should be an ambassador. Hey, are you fat? Do you like food that's fried and cheesy? Well, brother, do I have the place for you.
Hey, speaking of your podcast, did I maybe think that one of the people Matt Nagy interviewed for this defensive coordinator job since they were nine was Rick Camp?
Definitely. With his cheese stick pointer.
Yep.
You want to go over here, not over here.
Coach, it's a mozzarella stick again. That's not a dry erase marker.
It was in my fanny pack.
And maybe Rick Camp as a defensive coordinator at the whiteboard is one of my Tournament of Greatness submissions.
Oh, that would be awesome. That's a number one seed.
Imagining Rick Camp as an NFL defensive coordinator.
I mean, it's basically just Andy Reid.
No, it's so many of those guys. It's just so many of these, like, big, thick, white men, you know? Sort of indistinguishable, thick, white men wearing some sort of brightly colored wind shirt.
I'm pretty sure that's the title of performance where we can't discuss on a family show.
Right?
Coach Campy will be the one NFL coach in January wearing shorts on the sidelines. It's not that cold! I'm sweaty!
All right, so that's one of my Tournament of Greatest submissions. Rick Camp as a defensive coordinator at the whiteboard as one of Matt Nagy's nine interviews.
A tech publication called 1-0 released a story following a person attempting to demonstrate their possession of supernatural capabilities. The story, while creepy and unfulfilling, is a good reminder of the fact that if anyone out there is able to reliably teleport, levitate, mind read, predict the future, or summon X-ray vision, they're guaranteed a prize of $250,000. You want a quarter mildo? Go to 1-0, demonstrate your superpower. 1-0 follows a man named Gary Arnold, who believes he is able to hear voices coming what seems to be a sort of electrostatic ether. This is what we call a likely schizophrenic. The ability, while not exactly X-Men caliber, would of course be astonishing, although unfortunately, Arnold wasn't able to demonstrate his supernatural ability. But the contest is still ongoing. And here is a list of some people who have tried to prove that they had the superpowers. One entrant from September claimed he could circumvent Newton's laws of motion. To prove it, he sent a video showing him with the ability to alter the spinning direction of a glass knob without touching it. The video was so difficult to explain, the organization called in physicists to illuminate what was happening. Turns out, slanting a coffee table and rolling glass on glass makes magical, quote-unquote, things happen. Other entrants have provided very little convincing evidence of exceptional abilities. Alperin T, who said he could summon genies, and they brought him in and he couldn't. TR said he could emit static electricity from his hands, create lightning in the sky, and teleport. But he couldn't. So you can make these claims, but then you actually have to come before a panel of experts and judges and scientists and show them that you can actually do these things.
Define superpower.
Well, I've got a couple. I can spot a toupee in a room in an instant. I have toupee-dar that is amazing.
Who has a toupee that we don't think of?
Some names I can't say because they're people in the media. There are, I will also tell you this, if you watch Bulls games, not in the media, not in the action, if you watch Bulls games, there is a winner of one. And it's expensive, but it's a wig. My other skill, my other superpower, I can look at an array of suitcases. I can look at a trunk, whether it's my car or a rental car, and I can do trunk Tetris in a way that without actually taking things in and putting and taking them out, I can load that trunk as efficiently as humanly possible.
People say that a lot about moving trucks, too.
It's a dad skill.
Uh-huh. Or, you know, just if you've moved a lot.
What's
like
yours?
Me.
What's your superpower?
Wasting time.
That's not a superpower.
No.
Everybody does that.
Eating out of boredom? Still no?
No. You got to be something more exotic than that.
Making sarcastic comments about sports?
You're pretty good at that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But what about like finding things in your kitchen to give to Shane Reardon?
There may or may not be another episode coming today.
Oh, really?
And what's funny is I have a small kitchen, even for apartment standards. But does that stop me from having never-ending kitchen supplies to give to Shane Reardon? No, it does not.
That's the best, like, totally mundane bit of clean out your own kitchen and give it to Shane.
First of all, Shane has a larger kitchen. Secondly, Shane uses kitchen appliances and things that you use in a kitchen way more effectively than I do. Third, he describes them in a way that makes them sound like trash, but I know later he uses them, so I'm still okay with it because I know he appreciates it. I also give him all my mason jars. Because he appreciates those too. He uses them.
Yeah, but he's canning human body parts. And so I don't know. I think you may be sort of an accessory to what's going on there now that you're supplying him.
Plausible deniability, Dan.
Mine is that I can tell what my daughter's going to ask for just by the way she says dad.
Ooh. Oh, good one.
Dad, no, you cannot sleep over. How'd you know? I just know. I just know what you're going to say because we are the same person.
Yep, Jason's the same way. We're just like, hey, Dad, we're not playing golf today. Automatic stuff like that. Dad, you know, you're not getting a new 3-wood.
You guys are the fun police. Getting a new 3-wood and sleeping over at friends' houses are awesome.
The amount of detail that I get right that shocks her. She just, her mouth is agape. Like, how did you know exactly what I was going to ask? I don't know. I just don't. It's my superpower.
Oh.
Jordan Malley, superpower? In your youthful time, have you developed one yet?
I think it's me living my life in references. And I don't know if that's just a product of working here, but, you know, somebody will say something like, I don't know, they'll bring up 83, and I'll just say to myself, 83.
Yeah, that's a score producer thing, I think is what that is. Yeah.
You're writing your own soundboard in your mind. That means you're good at the job, actually.
83.
You also have a good nose for news. You have a good nose for, like, what's interesting.
It's sometimes. Sometimes our epic fails, but you got to take your shots, right? It's, I think of it like a dartboard. You got to just got to take your shots.
Shoot or shoot.
Exactly.
Is shooting a superpower? What about wearing yellow so that way you get a mustard stain, it blends in.
That's just smart. I don't know if it's a superpower. That's just smart.
But here's my thing is define the superpower, and then that's how you get the money. Talking around stuff.
Just retrofit it and go back and say, that's it. I've already proven it. Give me the $250,000.
Boom.
Give it a shot. That's the Midday Midway. Hub Arkish will tell us what he learned, if he learned anything from whatever yesterday's Bears press conference was.
I saw what Hub was doing yesterday. He had some skill in that move.
He had an angle. He did. He had an angle. We'll talk to him next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.